I'm thankful for the opportunity to speak on the book of Nehemiah. That's where we're going to spend our time in the next 3 days. We're going to be looking at the book of Nehemiah from several different perspectives, but I'd like to begin this morning with an event that you may have noticed that occurred on November 9th, 2009. It was an occasion that brought several Germans together, as well as some dignitaries, such as Lech Walesa and Mikhail Gorbachev. They spoke in turn on that rainy evening in Berlin. They were commemorating an event that had occurred 20 years before. They commemorated the occasion with 1,000 8-foot-tall foam dominoes, which they pushed down. It was the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. Now, if you know anything about the erection of that wall, it was essentially to keep the East Germans from continuing to stream across the border. After World War II and the partitioning of the various territories that the Russians and others were involved in, there was a line of demarcation in the city of Berlin. It was split in two, East Berlin and West Berlin. And the East Berliners were leaving in a steady stream until at the end of a particular period of time, from 1950 to 1953, there were such numbers that 20% of the East German population had defected. And a great many of those that had defected were their educated professionals. And so, in the cover of darkness, a wall in 1961 was put up. It was a wall that should have never been built. It was a wall that kept out influences that were good. It was a wall that kept in influences that were bad. But when we come to the book of Nehemiah, we have an altogether different kind of a building project going on. They're putting up a wall, but that wall was intended to keep good things inside and to keep out those things that would have been harmful to them. David Howard said that the wall rebuildings provided Jerusalem with a measure of security against its enemies, one that deflated their opposition to the Jews. The physical separation complemented the Jews' social and spiritual separation from foreigners that was so important as a part of the theology of Ezra and Nehemiah. In other words, they had an idea that God's people needed to act like God's people and to keep any influence that would hurt that while reaching out to those around them. Now, I want you to notice, and by the way, if you look out in front of you, I was told that you guys can multitask and you can eat and fill in these sheets that we have provided for you. If you'd like to do that, feel free to. If not, I understand. I'm not one who is all that good at multitasking. But in that, if you are noticing, there are several things that had to take place before they even got to the wall building. Several things in preparation. I want you to notice, and this will all be coming out of the book of Nehemiah. Number one, there was a problem to recognize. That's Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 3. We see the problem that the wall is broken down. Before we get started, we've got to understand what we're dealing with, and that was the problem to tackle. But number two, there was a process of response. In chapter 1 and verse 4. And here's the process. Nehemiah took time. He said, I sat down. He reflected. And he said, and we see that he invested emotion. He mourned and he wept. But he also went to God. He fasted and prayed. So he recognized the problem and then he set about to do something about it. But then number three, there was a petition to raise. Chapter 2 and verse 1. Nehemiah had to have the courage to go up to the most powerful man on earth at the time and to speak with him about the problem that his brethren were having back home. He was the cupbearer to the king. And if he was sad, it was so unusual that the king noted it for him that he could have lost his life for not having the right kind of demeanor in the presence of the king. But he had the courage to ask for help. Number four, there was a plan to realize. That's chapter 2 and verse 7. And if you look at that plan, it was well thought out and it was specific. It had to be because the problem was so great. Number 5, there were people to resist. Chapter 2, verse 10 and following. There were people who did not want the plan of God to succeed. And so they fought against Nehemiah. There will always be those who do not want the plan to succeed. Number 6, there were preparations to make ready. Chapter 2, verse 11 through 18. Nehemiah researched the project thoroughly. He didn't publicize his plans prematurely. He presented the problem plainly. He called for action and he gave the motivation. And then, and that's what I want us to focus on, there was a proper response in chapter 2 and verse 18. Because the leaders had done their work of identifying the problem and addressing the problem and identifying those who were part of the problem, the people who the leaders were leading, seeing and having such confidence in the leaders, said, "Let's start rebuilding. Let's get to the work." You know what they could have said? They could have said, "We've tried this before and wall building doesn't work." In the days of Ezra, they had stopped. Ezra chapter 4. They could have looked at the broken down walls all around the city and just accepted that broken down walls were just the reality. You know, we can do that sometimes. We can just look at the condition of things around us and see them as they are and say, "Well, that's just the way that it is." And yet, those with a mind of work, to work, look at the problem and say, "Let's get to the work." And so we have some things to focus on. Later in this week, we're going to look at the oversight. That's leadership. We're going to look at the obstacles. That's problems. But today, I want us to look at the objective and the obedience. Here is a dilapidated wall and a weakened people from exile, and yet they rebuilt the wall around Jerusalem in only 52 days. How did they do it? Notice with me just a few things this morning. Number one, they were able to rebuild the wall because they had a spirit of cooperation. One of the most beautiful things that we see in the book of Nehemiah is the spirit of cooperation among the people of God at that time. In chapter 3, we see this great spirit of cooperation through the things that occur there. But what does it take for a spirit of cooperation to exist? Well, here's what you'll observe from chapter 3. Number one, a genuine optimism. They were truly optimistic about their opportunity. In fact, if you go back to chapter 2 and verse 20, Nehemiah tells the enemies of God that the God of heaven will give us success. How true that old adage is that success comes in cans and not in tents. God's work goes forward when we have a can-do spirit. No matter how terrifying our task is or no matter how formidable our foe is. Now, does the church face problems today? Yes. Do we have problems? Certainly we do. But we also have a God who is able. You see, and with this spirit of optimism, what is it that we can't do? What should our attitude be toward this? The God of heaven will give us success. Our soul winning will succeed if we plant seeds. Our families will thrive if we properly prioritize. We can get the work done with that spirit of cooperation. Are we able to do what God wants us to do? Paul says, "I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." Caleb said, "We are well able." And is God able? He says in Jeremiah 32:27, "Is there anything too hard for me?" In Luke 18 and verse 27, Jesus said, "The things that are impossible with men are possible with God." And so as we look at this spirit of cooperation, we see that they understood that the God of heaven would give them success. But for this spirit of cooperation to exist, there also has to be wise delegation. Chapter 3, verse 1 through 32. How do you build a wall around your capital city in just 52 days without delegation? The wall at the beginning was in such disrepair that Nehemiah's donkey could not navigate around the eastern slope of the city. And yet, even with that being the case, they understood that they were going to be successful through delegation. Nehemiah went from place to place, but Nehemiah could not be at every work site constantly looking over the shoulders of the workers. And so there were others who were given those tasks. He delegated to others. Delegation is that which requires faith and other people to do the job and to do it right. The task that was given to Nehemiah was so large that he could not have possibly done it by himself. Leaders are those who have tremendous faith in people and believe that others can succeed, that they will assist them and give them the tools that they need, but they will trust them to do the work and will hold them accountable. And so it seems that this spirit of cooperation was enabled by wise delegation. The leader said others need to be involved, and we'll leave it to them and give them the task. But also notice with me that it requires, in addition to this, a willing membership. Chapter 3. Nehemiah chapter 3 contains 59 action verbs in 32 verses. To me, that makes it the Old Testament equivalent of Hebrews chapter 11. Go back through your study sometime of Nehemiah and Nehemiah chapter 3, and every time you come to an action verb, underline it. And when you get through with Nehemiah chapter 3, you're going to see the remarkable number of times that it says that they hung and they built and they repaired, and the other words that were involved there. They were willing. But it's amazing to me that the people had different backgrounds and had different abilities. This willing membership was made up of individuals, of men and women, of older people and younger people, those who were educated, those who were merchants, those who were from all kinds of different backgrounds. And not all the work was glamorous, and some of it was probably undesirable. I think about those guys like Malchijah and Hanoah, who had to repair the dung gate in verse 14 and 15. That's probably not something I should talk about during lunch, but I want you to think about that. Here were guys who were not building their resume. These were guys who were being involved where the poorest beggars retreated to, and yet they were willing. To me, the most remarkable thing is, as you look through Nehemiah chapter 3, that it was remarkable when somebody wasn't involved. The nobles of Tekoa were the only ones who would not put their hands to the work. Everybody else was involved. And so you have a willing membership. And when you look at all that was involved in that, when you see the divine ability, when you see the wise leadership, and when you see the willing membership, it leads us to the most beautiful part. The most beautiful part of the spirit of cooperation was that shoulder-to-shoulder aspect. The text in Nehemiah 3 says that one group built on the wall, and next to them another group, and next to them another group. And as we think about the work that God wants us to do on this earth as His people, that's the most beautiful part. People of varying backgrounds, people of different races, of different ages, of different abilities, all standing shoulder to shoulder together to get the work done. I think about a Midwestern fair in which there was horses were competing against one another for the largest amount of weight that they could carry. And they'd have sleds that they would carry with weights on them across the ground. And the champion had 4,500 pounds on that sled. And the second place horse had 4,400 pounds on its sled. And the men that were present said, "Well, what would happen if we hitched them together and they carried weights along the ground?" And they didn't carry 9,000 pounds together as they did alone. They carried over 12,000 pounds. More gets done when we have a spirit of cooperation with one another. Behold how good and how pleasant it is when brethren dwell together in unity. Psalm 133 in verse 1. Henry Ford said this. He said, "You can take my factories, you can burn down my buildings, but give me people and I will bring my business right back again." In the business of doing the Lord's work, when we work together, no matter what we face, we can come right back again because our God is able and with Him we're able. But number two, the people were successful because they had a mind to work. How beautiful. Chapter 4 and verse 6. You know, this started with Nehemiah's words of challenge and comfort in chapter 2, verse 17 and 18. And I love what John Maxwell, the leadership expert, said about it. He said, "The wall went up in record time because he won the hearts of the builders before he won the hands of the builders." They had a mind to work. Now that statement in chapter 4 and verse 6, "the people had a mind to work," is said despite severe opposition. Boy, I wish I had time to look into it. But if you look in chapter 4 and verse 1, Sanballat, it is said, was furious and very angry, and he mocked the Jews. In chapter 4 and verse 3, Tobiah joins in, and he says that the work is so feeble that a fox could jump on it and tear it down. And apparently the effect of Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem did discourage the people, according to chapter 4 and verse 3. But if you'll notice deeper, they may have been demoralized, but they were not deterred because of one thing: determination. The reason that they kept going was because they were determined, no matter what, to fulfill their mission. Nehemiah had a will to fulfill, and because of that strong will, he risked his personal relationship with the king. He risked his personal safety with ruthless enemies, and he sacrificed personal comfort. See, when Nehemiah came to Jerusalem, he couldn't check into the Jerusalem Marriott. There wasn't some nice, plush place for him to be. He had to go into this place of disrepair. And when the people saw the leaders willing to sacrifice like that, they said, "We're willing to get to the work as well." The people resolved to be involved. And it's no surprise that they put their hands to the work because they had already made up their mind that they were going to do it. During World War II, the city of Strasbourg had several churches, and one of the church buildings was very damaged by a bombing that took place. And the members came back and they were surveying the damage that was done. And they were happy to see that a statue of Christ that had been erected centuries before by a sculptor was still standing. They looked closer at it and they noticed that the hands had been sheared off by a falling timber. Some years later, a sculptor offered as a gift to put hands back on that statue. And the leaders sat and they thought about it. And they thanked him, but they declined. They said, "We want the statue to remain as it is to remind us that we are Christ's hands to do His work today." What a reminder. Persistence in God's power will lead us to victories that we never even thought we could fight in. When we think about our work, we think about the fact that there's so much to be done, and you can name the list of works that are needed to be done, but none of it will get done without a mind to work. But then also notice with me that they had a heart to pray. Chapter 4 and verse 9. Again, this starts with the leadership, and Nehemiah had a strong prayer life. I'm amazed to find, and you might check my count, I might have missed one or two, but at least 8 times Nehemiah engages in prayer in this short book. And it's interesting to see how that works. As you look at what he prayed for, he prayed for his brethren. He prayed for wisdom. He prayed for deliverance from his enemies. He prayed for God's blessings over and over again. Here's a leader who was in prayer. What we want is to have the confidence that our leaders are praying. Those who lead us in any way, we want to know that they are praying. And his prayers, as we look at them for their content, reflect so many things. They reflect persistence and praise and patience and passion, dependency and proper motivation, more things than you can write down very quickly. We can't be surprised to see that people will follow the example of leadership, so we see the people praying. When you look at the early church, there are 12 references to the church praying in Acts chapter 1 through 10. Here was a people who had problems, a people starting from humble beginnings. But is it any wonder that Paul would say that the gospel has been preached to the whole world? Colossians 1 and verse 23. They called upon their great and mighty God in Nehemiah 9 and verse 32. They were a people of prayer. And that's how the wall got built. But one other thing for us to notice this morning is that they had the wall built because they had the faith to fight. That's chapter 4 and verse 20. Boy, if you look at those enemies that were fighting them, you'll find that they mocked and hated them. Chapter 2 verse 19. They criticized them, chapter 4, verse 2 and 3. They conspired against them, chapter 4 and verse 8. They intimidated them, chapter 4 and verse 11. They pretended to be on their side, chapter 6 and verse 2. They pestered them, chapter 6 and verse 4. And they discouraged them, chapter 6 and verse 9. So they had these external pressures, but they also had internal problems. Things like selfishness and favoritism. They had personal shortcomings. They had their own problems. Look at chapter 13. They were neglecting their families spiritually. They had neglected their duty. But the message of Nehemiah is this, that they were still able to build the wall and restore the law despite the external pressures, the internal problems, and the personal shortcomings. That indicates to me that we can do that. Here's the key, and we have to close on this. I'm noticing the time. Notice why they succeeded by looking at chapter 4, verse 15 through 20. Number one, they pulled their own weight. All of them returned to the wall, each one to his own work. Number two, they fought together as a team. Some rebuilt the wall while others kept guard. Number three, they prepared for the battle. The builders had swords and they set up communications. And number four, they saw their need of God and they were confident that He would deliver them. 20 times in Nehemiah, they refer to Him as our God. We're going to face those things, but we can overcome them. These external pressures, these internal problems, and these personal shortcomings if we have the faith to fight. Voltaire mentions in his writings the Great Wall of China on several occasions. He has conflicted feelings about it. At times, he compares them to the Egyptian pyramids, and he says that the pyramids are childish in comparison to the Great Wall of China. But on another occasion, he calls the wall a monument to fear. People have conflicting feelings about the wall around spiritual Jerusalem, the church. They have feelings about perhaps the idea that God has broken down the wall of separation, but He has walled up His blessings inside of the church. But you see, He doesn't have that wall up to keep anybody out who wants to come inside. But Jesus is the door, John 10 and verse 1. And when we come inside, we enjoy those blessings. And we have a sword and a hammer so that we can rise up and build. Thank you.